It is the happy hour here on the Guy Benson Show. GuyBensonShow.com is our website. Thank you very much for tuning in. Our podcast, as always, is free of charge, on demand, as soon as the show is over, in just about an hour. GuyBensonShow.com, FoxNewsPodcast.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. I would also like to remind you that I'll be on Special Report tonight, joining the panel in the latter part of the 6 p.m. hour Eastern time on Fox News Channel. Hope you will tune in for that. This hour is sponsored by the Finnish Long Drink, so good. In fact, I introduced some friends to it over the weekend out in California. Big, big hit. TheLongDrink.com. Always drink responsibly. 21 plus only. Joining me here in studio is Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, retired, a Fox News contributor. He was former chief of staff of the National Security Council during the Trump administration. He has a book called War by Other Means. General, it's good to see you in person.
Thanks, Guy. Good to be with you.
Well, we got some very horrible news yesterday, and I think a lot of Americans were very concerned about what was happening in that region. Hundreds of attacks against our people, none of them lethal until now. Three service members have been killed by Iran proxies. What do we know at this hour?
Well, here's the unfortunate thing. I was just listening to Admiral Kirby talking, and you know, he is in the National Security Council spokesman, so he sits in the Situation Room when all these discussions are have with the president and his senior advisors. And my response just a minute ago was, uh-oh. And the reason I say that is I'm getting the tell from him that they're not going to respond with the United States aggressively at all. They're going to try to back it off a little bit. And what I mean by aggressively is if you don't super escalate, you go to a level that is really uncomfortable for everybody, both the adversary and yourself, then I think you just ask for more problems into the future. And I think that's what they're doing. You know, I was reminded that in 1988 when we nearly had a U.S. frigate sunk in the Persian Gulf. It was USS Samuel Roberts. It hit a mine, and 10 sailors were wounded. Nobody was killed. But Ronald Reagan destroyed half of the Iranian Navy, the operational Navy, as a result of that. And this is the kind of message you need to send. And I don't think this administration wants to. And I think because you've got a president, a commander-in-chief, who avoids risk. I mean, he's got a track record of that. So you're going to have an environment, meaning the Middle East, that has continued to be very, very undisciplined and a lot of problems out there, and he's going to let it continue. So this is not good. I think this is just going to lead to more and more problems going forward, and this is going to be one of those, watch how this plays out. You know, the next 3 days or 4 days, you know, 5 days, hey, we're in Super Bowl weekend, and if they don't respond within the next 3 or 4 days, it'll be a very limited response.
The president in cut three reacting this way in South Carolina. Listen.
Last night in the Middle East, we lost three brave souls in attacking one of our bases. And we shall respond.
Hard to hear there, but he said we lost three brave souls in the Middle East. An attack at one of our bases, we shall respond. Mm-hmm. The administration is saying it will be at the time and in the nature of our choosing. So some relatively tough rhetoric, but you're talking about the risk aversion that you've seen from this president and his team over and over again. It seems to me that it's not a great strategy, because if they're really worried about risk, the risk has gone nowhere but up as a result of this weakness, right?
Well, it really has. And remember, this is the same president who said, don't. You know, I mean, he uses words because he says, well, this is really going to play well to the American people. But it's in his gut, it's in his craw that he doesn't do that. He doesn't respond. He doesn't tell his advisors or the SecDef or anybody else involved to take a hard shot. And that's, by the way, part of the reason I believe this important guy, it's in his DNA. I mean, when you look at what he has done historically, and I used to pattern people. You set patterns, I set patterns, everybody sets patterns, where you go to buy your gasoline or the service when you go to a grocery store, wherever you go, he has set a pattern of a risk avoidance. I mean, it goes back to, remember, when they went after Osama bin Laden, President Obama, the one guy in the Situation Room who said, let's think about it a bit, was Joe Biden. And he sets a tone, and that tone is going to be risk avoidance, and he doesn't understand the complications of what happens later. And what happens is you create this now massive problem that it takes an overcorrection to fix it, and he's not going to do that. So what are you going to see? You're going to see more attacks coming. You're going to see more Americans being killed. and you're going to see risk avoidance at a high end. Here's one of the tells it's going to be interesting to see. And this is one of the – it's either going to be a good move, a decent move, or a disgraceful move. And it's all about the dignified transfer. Those three Americans are going to come back to Dover Air Force Base where they come – and they're going to be coming back and carrying cases, which is just how they died. In other words, they're not – because they come back to a mortuary. He better be there. And if he doesn't be – if he's not there to receive – those three great Americans, then there ought to be national outrage on that.
I think he'll be there. I feel like
what I hope so.
This team can't shoot straight about almost anything, but that one is so obvious. Yeah. I think he'll probably be there. But keep in mind, it's not just these three who were just killed in this attack. We lost two seals the other day, too. Mm-hmm. They were lost at sea in a fight against the Houthis, who they had, in the administration, declassified as a terrorist group in a nod to Iran. We saw how that all went. They kind of quasi-reversed that recently, and you exposed how that wasn't actually a full reversal. It's less than meets the eye. You were talking about the tone being set, by the president. And you quoted him saying, don't. This was the official talking point, not just from him, but the top brass of the administration. They were asked, what is your message for Iran? Because they've been messing with us and attacking us by proxy now for months on end. And in cut nine... here you're going to listen to the president, the vice president, and the secretary of state.
What is your message to Hezbollah and its backer, Iran?
Don't. Don't, don't, don't.
What's the message to Iran?
Don't.
It was very important to send a very clear message to anyone who might seek to take advantage of the conflict in Gaza to threaten our personnel. Here or anywhere else in the region.
And then the message was, don't. Mm-hmm. And Iran listened to that message and then did over and over again. They hear don't. They don't care. And now we have five American service members dead in the last week or so. How do you change this trajectory? I know you're talking about overwhelming force, because often in military conflict, people in Washington talk about proportional response. And one of the criticisms of Israel has been, oh, it's disproportionate what they've done after October 7th, which I disagree with. But I think sometimes in military circles, and you've brought this up, a disproportionate response is what is required to really put the fear of God into enemies. And clearly that is not the case right now. What would a disproportionate but appropriate response look like?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I would probably, if I was sitting in there, I'd say, okay, here are your options, let them come in with doing it. And I'm probably at the high end of a disproportionate response, only because it means you can affect the situation. And here's what I'd say to him. Okay, you could tell the Supreme Leader, Khamenei, he's vulnerable to come after him. Ismail Ghani, who's the leader of the Quds Force, the one who followed Soleimani, he's there. Their entire naval fleet is there. Their refineries are there. Fordo, the nuclear facility, we can take that out if we had to. It's a hard and deeply buried target, but we could go after it. You send a message like that, and I'd say these are the list of options we've done. I'm not going to attack out of Iran. I'm going to attack into Iran, and I'm going to make it so that your eyes are going to water a little bit. And the reason I go to the personal side of the house is you can repair facilities. You can't repair leadership. Like Ghani, who took over from Soleimani, is not the same commander who's leading the Quds Force. He may be trying to do the same things, but the personality such is different. And I would basically say, you know, you've done this enough. You're now vulnerable. We warned Khamenei the last time. You kill an American, we're coming after you. We did that during the Trump administration. And in the State of the Union, President Trump in January of 2020 said, if you attack an American, your life is forfeit. Okay? Game on. And that's where you go to a level. And that's when everybody says, okay, we understand the consequences of this. Everybody's serious about it. The Americans are serious about it. We're going to try to restabilize the Middle East. And otherwise, that's what I mean about disproportionate. Say, you mean you're actually talking about taking out a leader? The answer is, yeah, you are. And I understand the risk. I get it. But if you don't do that, I think you're going to lose more Americans. This area is going to be more destabilized. And within this year, they're going to have a nuclear weapon. And then you've got major problems in the Middle East, because the Saudis aren't going to tolerate that, meaning they're going to get one of their own. And you've got you talk about destabilization.
Oh, an arms race, you know, back on steroids.
That's right.
On warp speed, their own Operation Warp Speed, but nuclear weapons in the Middle East. How does that sound? And I think your point is a fair one. I have seen a lot of people, sort of typical folks on the left, but also increasingly this vocal element of the right, who look at a situation like we've just seen and they say, yes, that's terrible, but we really shouldn't be there in the first place, yeah. And they were sitting ducks, and we shouldn't be doing this whole, you know, empire thing when we've got so many problems back at home. And the warmongers just want war with Iran. And if you strike inside Iran, then you're starting another war, and these are endless wars. This is a talking point mm-hmm. that is no longer just the province of the left. It's got a real foothold on the right as well. I think many other conservatives say it is intolerable to kill Americans, and so you're going to really face a heavy penalty. But what's your counterpoint to the warmonger screaming that you're already starting to hear?
Yeah, I'd say very simply, I didn't start this fight. Okay, you started this fight. And if you started this fight, I'm going to finish it. But, you know, leave me alone. If you leave me alone, things are going to be okay. But the minute you start attacking my shipping, or you start attacking facilities, or you start attacking troops, it now becomes personal. And I'm going to respond in kind. You have an option. You have an option to leave me alone. Don't do anything. But, bam, once you come after me, I'd say, it's game over. And I think if they believe that and they say, uh-oh, these guys are really serious about it, And I get the risk. I understand about escalation. But if you don't do that, then America is nobody is like a France or an Italy or a Spain. It's not the leader of the world. And you want to establish yourself as a leader of the world. You know, remember, I go back to 1904 with Teddy Roosevelt, when the Petraeus affair, when a bandit by Brazzulli took an American businessman named Petraeus. That was the start of gunboat diplomacy. He sent a fleet into the Mediterranean. He said, give me back Petraeus, which they did. And that started to establish the way we thought. And I think that's important. And I understand I'm probably sitting on the hard right of it. But I'm it's not because I want to start a war, but I just want to establish the fact that you do not mess with the United States of America. If you do, if you start the fight, you will pay the price.
And isn't it a real problem, to revisit a point we've already made, but it's really not sitting well with me. Isn't it such a problem that you have the Commander-in-Chief of the United States of America and his top deputy, the Vice President, and the Chief Diplomat of this country all looking into the camera and sternly saying, don't, to Iran, and Iran just says, bleep you, and if anything, they escalate, and they take more pot shots at our people, and then it doesn't just wound some of them, it kills some of them. It's like our adversaries are emboldened. They don't believe that we're going to follow through with anything. And our allies are sitting around very much watching. Oh, and you know who else is watching? The guys in Beijing, no doubt about that. This is another leadership test moment for Joe Biden, having failed quite a few of them already, particularly Afghanistan. This feels like another crossroads.
Yeah, you know, it's history always repeats itself, and it's amazing how it does that. But go back to 1938, peace in our time. You know, they didn't, you know, believe what Hitler was going to do. Golda Meir, the former prime minister of Israel, said something which is really a neat comment. She said, "If somebody says they're going to kill you, believe them." Mm-hmm. And they say, "Death to America and death to Israel." And you look at it and say, "Guys, there's a reason they're saying that. It's not because it sounds good, but they really believe it, and you must counter that."
So you think this is something that needs to happen swiftly in a matter of days and needs to be a shock and awe type thing given what has happened? Do you think that will happen, though, or seems like your estimation is much lower?
Yeah, it's much lower. Actually, you got about a 5-day window. And when we went after Soleimani, it was about a 3-day window. And if you don't do it, because then people forget about things going on, it's an ADD society. And I don't think if they do that, this administration is doing it deliberately. What I mean by deliberately, they figure, you know, if I can get to next weekend, maybe another event will come up and we'll just push it down the line. You watch what happens. I don't think you're going to see anything significant. The option they could probably start executing me within the next 3 or 4 days. If it doesn't happen by the end of this week, it's going to be a lesser option, nothing big, and it's done deliberately, and it's based on the DNA of not only the commander-in-chief, but also his aides and advisors. And I've been in the room, and I've seen how advisors think and work, and some of them sweat, some of them don't do well, some of them fade under pressure. This is one of those, you have to know what your core beliefs are and they're the reason you're doing it. You're not out there with your hair all screwed up and you're yelling and everything else. No, it's very calm, very deliberate. And why are you doing this? And there must be a very good intent. And you follow through on that intent.
Yeah.
There's a reason why you want to do it.
Calm, calculated, forceful.
Yes.
Sounds like your hopes are relatively low. Let's hope you're wrong.
Yeah.
Because this needs to happen, not just for vengeance or for justice, but also to help protect American lives moving forward. Because weakness, as you say, will invite more of this. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, retired, a Fox News contributor, our guest here in studio. He was the chief of staff of the National Security Council in the Trump administration under very difficult circumstances, sir. It's good to see you. Thank you for your insight.
Thanks, Guy. Thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back.
New talk for a new generation. The Guy Benson Show.